Welcome to Fireside Chats with me, Grand Chief Jerry Daniels, brought to you by the Southern Chiefs Organization. Join us as we chat and highlight all the advocacy we are doing with and for our nation. Bonjour, Anine. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Fireside Chats, brought to you by the Southern Chiefs Organization. I'm SCO Grand Chief and your host, Jerry Daniels. We are coming to you from inside the studios of NCI on Treaty 1 territory. We have another great show for you with three special guests. As you may know, today is Indigenous Justice Awareness Day. So we want to speak about topics related to justice. Joining us are three First Nations people who will share a bit about some of the important work they do. Up first today, I will be sitting down with Chief Lawrence Letander of the Dauphin River First Nation. Then we'll visit with two members of the SCO team, Angie Hutchinson and Dalen Piechu. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the next half hour here on NCI or wherever you get your podcasts. Today is Indigenous Justice Awareness Day. Justice is a topic that we could talk about for more than one episode of Fireside Chats. Before we go further, I do want to make a note that some of the things we talk about may be triggering for some of the listeners. Please take care while you listen to the rest of this show. To help us get our conversation on justice started, I'm happy to introduce you to our next guest, Lawrence Letander. He's the chief of the Dauphin River First Nation. Lawrence is a former member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police with 10 years of service. Throughout his career, he was trained in various areas, including the DARE program. In 2021, Lawrence left the RCMP and was elected as chief. Since then, he has been helping fight the alcohol and opioid crisis. To be proactive, Lawrence has been helping bring in various capital projects into his community, including an addictions and trauma facility and wellness center. Chief Letander, welcome to Fireside Chats.
Thank you very much for allowing me to have this opportunity to come here and have a chat with you.
Let's start at the beginning. Tell us about your formative years. Where did you grow up and how did you end up pursuing a career with the RCMP?
I grew up in my community, Dauphin River, until I was about, 13 years old. Then I moved away for school, lived in Ashern, moved down to Winnipeg eventually. That's where I graduated from high school. And I moved back home to work within my community. I was the youth recreation worker. But inside of me, I always had the dream of joining the RCMP. And the reason for that is because I had two uncles that were in the RCMP. And I was pretty much inspired by that. Yeah, it was always in me that one day I would join the RCMP. I eventually worked a couple other jobs, and then one day I had an opportunity where my uncle, who was a sergeant, well, a retired sergeant from the RCMP, approached me one day and said, "Hey, would you like to join the RCMP?" I responded with a yes. I got in touch with an Indigenous recruiting officer. And I filled out the forms, and it happened so fast that within, 8 months, I found myself heading to Regina for the training, and it happened very, very quick.
You recently shared a story about something traumatic you went through when you were working with the RCMP. Can you tell me a bit about the story you shared regarding the time someone tried to shoot you?
I was working a day shift, and a call came in for the neighboring detachment about a suicidal male at a farm. From the dispatch, the caller stated that who was actually the one that shot at me was talking with our dispatch, stating that he wanted to pretty much, you know, end his life and wanted the police to shoot him. And I guess made comments that any cops that would show up on scene, he would shoot them. But of course, you know, it was my job. I went to help the neighboring detachment. I showed up there. Sure enough, there was a few other members that had already arrived on scene, and I went behind a tractor and stayed there, and then eventually he caught sight of me and shot a few rounds. The first round went past my head. I can still hear the sound of the round as it zipped by. I'll never forget that. And a few more rounds hitting the tractor, and yeah, but you know, it was all the training that I had gone through that really helped me maintain composure and, you know, keep focus.
Your story raises a lot of important issues. There's a lot to unpack there. One thing I want to say is that it is good to hear that you're able to respond to this call in a way that prevented the loss of life. This year, we continue to hear about how First Nation citizens pass away at times when police become involved in responding to calls for help. There's many examples of this. I'd like to ask you, can you reflect a bit on the current situation between policing and First Nations people?
For me, speaking as a former member of the RCMP, I would say a lot of the interaction between police and First Nation, it depends on the member. You have members that understand what First Nations people are all about, and you have some that don't. And I know the RCMP in recent years have really implemented trying to get members to take studies in First Nations to understand a lot of the background of the Indigenous people. I think that helps, but I think a majority of them will learn and do learn when they're actually in the community and learning from the people. I can honestly say that it hasn't been an easy road between police and First Nations. Like I said, it depends on the member and you know, who they are, where they come from, and if they're willing to learn and to accept that the way people are, that a lot of them do have challenges. But I would say that there needs to be a lot of change when it comes to policing. There needs to be a better understanding, a better way of the justice system in itself, of how our people are dealt with, that a lot of times they are dealt with unfair court proceedings. A lot of them are left in the dark and left alone because they're pretty much treated the same as somebody who is a non-Indigenous person. And I think we have to, take a step back and realize that we need to really take a look at everything and from an objective perspective and see that the First Nations people and the police and whatever agency it may be that, is in their community, that they really need to understand that these people do have struggles, that a lot of their decisions aren't always because they want to be a bad person. It's the fact that they're struggling and they don't really have a sense of identity of who they are. There is a lot of good cops out there. I've worked with police officers who are not Indigenous at all, but yet they take the time to listen. I've seen firsthand that one member take the time to listen to someone that I knew that I grew up with in another neighboring community, where they sat down to listen to them and understand their story, where they come from. And it makes a big difference. And I think that's if we want to build that relationship, that's where it starts from, is just listening.
How did working with the RCMP influence your decision to get involved in community leadership?
I think seeing the struggles as a police officer, it really took a toll on me because a lot of times you're really reactive. And I think being proactive is another thing. So it was just seeing the trauma that the people went through and realizing that this is where I came from. And I really want to step into that role of saying, you know what, I want to help my people in a better way and in a stronger way and with more advantages and more a better position.
As mentioned in your introduction, you are now working to address alcohol and addictions crisis in your nation. Can you tell us a bit of how that alcohol and addiction impacts justice in your nation?
Alcohol and addictions, like I was saying earlier, that I grew up in that environment. I grew up with that affecting my life growing up, and it's a difficult thing. Alcohol and addictions, it really challenges a lot of families to want to make a difference because it sort of networks into all families and all families feel it. So if we want to uproot the problem in one area, well, then you're going to pull out the root. It's going to affect this family. And I know this family wants a change, but it's going to hurt them. And, I would say this, it's easy to remove a drug dealer from a community, but at the same time, it becomes a health crisis to the ones that are addicts.
Thank you, Chief Letander. This is an issue that many of our people are grappling with. What inspires you to keep going and to stay strong as a leader in your community?
I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandfather always instilled in me, and he only went up to grade 3. And the one thing he always taught me was if you want something in life, you have to work for it. And regardless of whether you have certain challenges or whether you feel like, this person is smarter than you, he always told me, be the best you could. He goes, and when you do that, he says, people will see the difference. And for me, my inspiration is that I don't want to be someone that'll easily walk away. It is easy just to walk away and give up. But, strong people that you see today come from the most hardest times of their life because they want to be the best for somebody else that doesn't have that same opportunity.
Lastly, February is I Love to Read month. Do you have a book you could recommend to those who are listening?
Yeah, I really like the book. When I was in high school, there was a book that our class had read, The Pig Man. I can't remember the author's name, but it's basically about two teenagers who befriend a 50-some-year-old man, and they become really good friends with him, and he's sort of a mysterious character. But in the end of it all, they sort of help each other with getting their strengths out of one another.
Chief Lawrence Letander, thank you for taking the time to be with us on Fireside Chats. You are listening to Fireside Chats. I'm your host and SCO Grand Chief Jerry Daniels. As we discussed in the first half of the show, today is Indigenous Justice Awareness Day, and so we are going to focus on the concept of justice. Justice is a topic that impacts all of us, as First Nations people continue to be overrepresented in the justice system. At the Southern Chiefs organization, we have a number of programs that are seeking to make a positive impact in the area of justice. Today, I am happy to have two of our SCO team members in studio with me to share a bit about themselves and the work they do related to justice. Angie Hutchinson is the Pathways to Healing Program Lead. Angie is a First Nations woman from the long line of matriarchs from Mississippi-Wistiki Nation, hope I got that right, in Treaty 5 territory. Committed to living the Minopamatasewin, the good life, Angie is a pipe carrier, sun dancer, and holds a cedar bath bundle. She is currently pursuing a Master's of Social Work degree.
Thank you, Grand Chief, for inviting me today.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Also joining us today from the SCO team is Dylan Piechu, a member of the Skounen First Nation. Dylan has a Bachelor of Science in Psychology and has worked with youth for more than 5 years. He is the Youth Project Lead at SCO. Dylan is working to address the overrepresentation of First Nations youth in the criminal justice system. Welcome to Fireside Chats, Dylan.
Thanks for having me, Grand Chief. It is a privilege to be here.
Dylan, it's great to have you on the program. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about the work you're doing at SCO?
Of course, yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm from SKO. I graduated from the University of British Columbia in 2021 with a Bachelor of Science in Psychology. Through the learning experience there and my work experience with CFS through respite care and as a behavior interventionist, that really inspired me to want to continue working for youth, in particular First Nations youth. It's beyond evident that our youth need a lot of support when navigating complex systems like the justice system. So I'm very thankful to have been onboarded by SCO last year and as the youth project lead. So a bit about the work. I work in our justice department with a fantastic team of community justice workers, First Nations court workers, McCoy, Jeanette, Brenda, Cindy, Andrea, Shale, Bonnie. I'm sure I'm missing some, but it's a fantastic team of individuals who I get to collaborate with to address this issues that our justice system kind of carries. So bit about myself. I work at MYC directly with the youth. I provide programming right now based in culture. So I actually just did a arts-based program 2 weeks ago, which was a fantastic success. And externally, I'm developing some programming for the youth as well, namely those that have been affected by child welfare and the justice system. So it's a bit of me in a nutshell.
Angie, I'd like to ask you the same thing. Please tell us a bit about yourself and the work you're doing at SCO.
Yes, thank you. So the Southern Chiefs Organization's Pathways to Healing program provides culturally appropriate support, information, advocacy, systems navigations, referrals, and much, much more to individuals impacted by missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, Two-Spirit, and gender diverse people, as well as survivors of residential day school and the 60 Scoop and the child welfare system. This includes work such as our annual awareness campaign to draw attention to the ongoing crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirited people, as well as supporting the motion from the House of Commons to declare the death and disappearance of Indigenous women and girls as a Canada-wide emergency. We also have supported the calls for the Red Dress Alert, which would be a system to alert the public when an individual goes missing. So the Pathways to Healing program supports survivors of colonial systems, as I've mentioned, including residential day schools, 60 Scoop CFS, as well as MMIWG 2+. And we most recently hosted our second annual Survivors Healing Gathering, where SEO brought together over 550 survivors from across Manitoba and including other provinces to support healing.
Angie, can you talk a little bit about the kind of work you're doing to support people who are interacting with the justice system?
Yes, SEO's work to address the national emergency of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and gender diverse people is focused on the full implementations of the calls to justice according to culturally relevant principles in line with the SEO member nations. The calls for justice are legal imperatives that are rooted in Canada's obligation under international and domestic human rights law. First Nations women, girls, and gender diverse individuals are disproportionately impacted by violence and life-threatening violence. We need to end the national crisis as lives are at risk every day. And SEO recognizes that all Indigenous women, girls, Two-Spirit, and gender diverse people are sacred and have traditionally held revered roles as life givers and caregivers to the community.
Thank you, Angie. Dylan, I'd like to ask you if you can reflect on what Angie has shared. How does this align with what you have seen when it comes to youth who are involved with the justice system?
For sure. Getting to work with the youth and learning from our First Nations court workers and community justice workers, a lot of which have been doing this kind of work for over 10 years, some even 20, and it's fascinating to hear that it's the same issues that we're dealing with currently. It's the same systemic barriers that our people face, and hearing from the youth themselves, it's incredibly impactful to see the resiliency and the courage that they're facing while navigating these extremely robust and complex systems. And echoing what Angie said, it's extremely important to address these calls to action and continue to work for our people to dismantle these barriers that they're facing on the daily. So,
can you tell me a bit more about the projects you're working on for the youth?
Absolutely, yeah. So as I had mentioned, I just completed I was invited by the Manitoba Youth Center to participate in their cultural days. So I hosted a arts program in collaboration with Jennifer Wood, which is one of SEO's in-residence artists. She's fantastic and helped develop a program for woodland-style painting. So over 2 days, the 92 youth that are within the center, got to spend up to 2 hours learning about the art form, its history, while collaborating and connecting with, not only myself and the staff, but the other youth as well. So that was a fantastic success. I'm hoping to host more of those. Concurrently, we're also developing some weekly programming external to MYC, largely to support the youth who are exiting the facility, but also those in the urban center that, need that place to go to find that connection, positive outlets, and to reconnect with culture. A lot of that programming, we intend it to be performed in a good way, so having elders involved and knowledge keepers and reconnect with like beading and sewing, but also a focus on recreation. We hosted a youth justice forum back in September where we heard a lot of feedback from our youth as to what kind of programming they'd like to see in our community. So all of this programming is in line with the visions of the youth themselves, which is paramount to the success of this project. And then, of course, we have larger events that are currently in the early stages of being planned. So I don't want to say too much right now, but a lot is happening with respect to our youth and within the justice system and the child welfare system as well.
Thank you, Dylan. It sounds like it takes a special kind of person to do the work that both you and Angie are doing. Angie, what inspires you to do this work? What have you learned from the people you have been supporting?
National inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls really raised the consciousness of Canadian society to the epidemic levels of violence that is inflicted upon Indigenous women, girls, and gender diverse individuals. And so while we've known that these levels of violence have long been known by First Nations people, the inquiry really shone a spotlight for the rest of Canada to understand that the conditions of colonization have created an environment that perpetuates violence. So the inquiry really highlighted the role that every Canadian has to play to end the national emergency of violence against Indigenous women, girls, and gender diverse individuals. At SEO, we recognize that we need to honor all of those who have been lost by creating change within systems and structures in our society that continue to create the conditions of violence that's directed to First Nations, Indigenous women, girls, and gender diverse individuals. We also recognize that the strength and healing that's held within our First Nations wisdom and culture, and we use that wisdom to wrap around and support families and communities who've been impacted by the loss of loved ones alongside many of our community partners. And this can look like vigils, sacred fires, feasts, and memorials for loved ones.
Thank you, Angie. Before we let yous go, February is I Love to Read Month. Do you have a book you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I would recommend two graphic novels from Manitoba authors. The first being Betty, the Helen Betty Osborne story from David Robinson, and Surviving the City by Tasha Spillett.
Dylan?
Yeah, so really into reading science fiction. So my colleague McCoy recommended Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson. So haven't been able to put that one down for the last 2 days. So,
Angie, Dylan, I'm so glad you were able to have both of you on the SEO team. Thank you for sharing more about yourselves and the work you're doing with us today on Fireside Chats. And that's going to do it for this edition of Fireside Chats. If you'd like to learn more about our programs at SEO, please visit our website at seoinc.mb.ca. Thank you to our listeners, our guests, and everyone at SEO and NCI who have helped us put this show together. If you have any questions or ideas about future episodes, you can send us an email at media@seoinc.mb.ca. We look forward to your feedback and to bringing you a new episode of Fireside Chats next week. On behalf of our entire team, I am SEO Grand Chief Jerry Daniels. Miigwech, Padamaye for listening. Talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to Fireside Chats with me, Grand Chief Jerry Daniels, brought to you by the Southern Chiefs Organization. We hope you join us next time for Fireside Chats, every Friday at 5:30, right here on NCI FM.